Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Touchdown for the Bears.
Dave Wannstedt
has guided his Bears to the playoffs, and he knows what it takes to succeed.
NFL head coach for 11 years.
The Bears came in here, and Dave Wannstedt, there's a happy group of overachievers that have been well coached.
College football national champion.
A superb game plan defensively by the Miami Hurricanes.
The party has begun in Miami.
Super Bowl champion.
They swarm to the ball so incredibly. This speed burning defense, number one in the NFL. Dave Wannstedt, the defensive coordinator.
Football analyst for Fox Sports and NBC Sports Chicago.
Let me just give you something, okay? And you can talk about this the rest of the week.
Dave Wannstedt.
Dave Wannstedt with the mustache. Looks like Bill Cowher, the Pittsburgh coach, a little bit, doesn't he?
And Ditka likes him. What kind of a guy is this, right?
With McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Arlington Acura. When searching for a new Acura, search for ArlingtonAcura.com. Dave Wannstedt joins us now, as he does every week during the football season. McNeil and Parkins on The Score. How's it going, Dave?
I am great. Okay, let's not talk too long about Clemson, Parko. I know you're just dying to jump into it, but
I'll be able to hold off. I'll be able to hold off. But you know,
he did a lot of chirping on Tuesday. That's for sure. People were mad at him, Dave, because he was the only happy guy in town Tuesday.
You know what? Yeah, that's exactly right. I was all about Clemson too. You guys knew that, but. Wow, that was a great win. I thought about you when they were kind of running away with it there. But
best program in the country?
Go ahead. Whatever. You know, yeah, that's what you want to say. That's fine. You know,
you differ, huh?
Yeah, but it was brutal. I know. I did the post game show for the Bears, and I walked home from NBC Sports there, and honestly, God, I usually walk home after every show on a Monday night, and the city was quiet. I mean, it didn't make any difference. It was men, women, kids, elderly. Nobody was talking. It was an eerie feeling Sunday night. There's no question about that.
Yeah, a funeral dirge cast over our city. I saw just a little bit of that post-game show. I was waiting for some analysis, but there were some guys caught in broadcast hell, some of those ex-players. I never heard you get a word out because they were trying to get Lance to speak English. Wow.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't even try. I just listened to them and and then I just reacted, you know. But no, it was tough deal. But you know what? At the end of the day, when you really look at it, you know, we obviously you got to make the kick. We know that, you know, and everything goes with that. But you know, offensively, what they score, one touchdown, 0-for-3 in the red zone. You know what? 30%, 5-for-15, or whatever it was on third down conversions. So there were enough things that I look at the game to say, yeah, I mean, the Bears should have won the game. They should have made the kick and won the football game. But it's an interesting thought. You know, you get into the playoffs, you know, because of your strength of your team, but you get eliminated because of the weakness of your team.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look, you know, at the Bears thing, I mean, I was concerned myself. Hey, what happened? I actually said this. I said, what happens if I just hope the Bears? I was doing your pregame show, you know, with Hub Arkish over there before the game on The Score. And I said, you know, I just hope this thing doesn't come down to Mitch or kicking a field goal. And it came down and Mitch came through. I mean, Mitch put him in position to win the game. So that part of it was positive. But they had a lot more opportunities, You know, you hate to admit it, but it is the reality of it. And who would have bet? Yeah, I mean, Dan, that guy. So are you, Parko?
Yeah, we lost money.
Hey, what would you have bet though if you say 4th and 3, right? 4th and 3, and this team's got to score a touchdown against the Bears defense. I mean, even when it got down to fourth down, I said, "There's no way Philadelphia scores, no way." And they, you know, they give up a touchdown. So I mean, it's you can look at this thing from a coach's perspective. A fan, you're going to look at one thing. I kind of look at that there's more to it than just one play.
Dave, we thought yesterday early in the show that just a formality before the Bears announced Todd Bowles as the successor to Broncos head coach Vic Fangio, and then we get news at 2 o'clock he's going to Tampa to honor that commitment to Bruce Arians. Of the names you've heard kicked around, which couple of names appeal to you the most to succeed Vic?
Wow, you know what? That's a good question. Yeah, I never really saw the Todd Bowles thing coming. You know, I kind of knew that Arians was going to get that job. He played for Arians. You know the story at Temple. They just hired Keith Armstrong today. He's going. He played for Bruce at Temple, so he's putting the old band back together. You know, the interesting thing about the Bears' job is you got to get somebody that understands this defense, in my opinion. You know, you don't want to get into one of these situations where there could be a top-notch defensive coordinator out there. You know, let's say it was Todd Bowles. Let's just use him as an example. And you bring him in, and now he is a true 4-3 guy, completely different than the 3-4, you know, defense that Fangio ran, the under defense. And now you're changing philosophy a little bit. I think that would be a mistake. So the key is, and that's a good question, because, you know, obviously they had Donatello, the secondary coach there, you know, he would be a guy to consider because he's been with Fangio at the 49ers. And here, their secondary coach, what is it, Ed Donatello, is that his name? Am I pronouncing it right?
Yes. Yep, and Ed Donatello.
Yeah, but, you know, if they don't hire him, I don't know if there's any, I don't think there's anybody else on that defensive staff qualified. So now that's just my opinion.
How difficult is the job, Dave?
Well, when I left Dallas, to give you an idea, you know, Jimmy Johnson and I talked, okay, I'm going to Chicago. What do you think? And it was the same thing. Hey, Butch Davis. Butch knows it. The players know it. We know the adjustments. We cannot afford to retool this thing. So Butch Davis takes over. They keep it going. Butch Davis leaves and goes to Miami. Jimmy gives it to Dave Campo. Campo's there with Switzer when they go to a Super Bowl. They're running the same scheme system that put in when I was there, and the adjustment. You know, I mean, you're 20 every year. Don't get me wrong. I'm not that simple. But defense is the same, and the players know it, and you improve on what you need to get better from the year before. It's not starting over and then and making adjustments on the move.
Do you want the gig?
No. Do I want the gig? No. I'll be a senior advisor. How's that?
There you go.
But no, then I'd miss your show. You know, our show.
Yeah.
Here,
and yeah. That We're just getting started. We got so many years of this left to go.
Yeah, I hear you. But, you know, so I think that's key, to get somebody in there that knows the system and can keep this thing growing, because you got a lot of young players. I mean, you got a lot of young players that are just a year or two into this thing, and I think that's critical. You know, you look at the Patriots, you look at the and use the college program, you look at Alabama, the most successful programs, when the coordinators leave, you know, when Bill O'Brien left the Patriots, or Romeo Crennel left the Patriots to become a head coach, the next guy in didn't come in and just overhaul the defense and put in a completely new scheme with new words and new terminology. You just keep the system going. So that, I think, is critical for the Bears. Who, to answer your question, Danny, I don't know. I really don't know. I haven't researched that thing. What names are out there? I'll tell you yay or nay right now.
Chris Richard or Chris Richard of the Cowboys, who's also rumored to be a candidate for the Dolphins job, the head coaching job. But he's a guy who's on my hit list if Dallas would be willing to let him talk to the Bears.
He's an excellent coach, but he's 4-3 guy all the way. Pete Carroll, 4-3. Kenny Norton's out there. Pete and him are running our Dallas defense. What do the Cowboys do? The Cowboys are running that Tony Dungy. It's what we ran at the – they're basically running the same thing. They're running that 4-3 defense. So you're talking about a guy that's you know.
But a good coach adapts to his talent, right?
He's an outstanding coach. Let me tell you, yes. I mean, that if he could, he could learn the playbook. He could get it, you know. But I'm just telling you, you can learn a play. There's playbook coaches, and there's coaches that think outside the box. And when you take over a job, I always that when I was hiring guys, you know, a guy can study a playbook, and I can go in an interview, and I could explain everything to you about the 3-4 defense. I could. I mean, I was with George Edwards when we ran that thing up at Buffalo, and he had Dick LeBeau's playbook, and he had Saban's playbook, and he had Don's playbook, and we were using all three of them. I studied that thing because I was not a 3-4 guy. I wanted to learn it. Well, I could explain that to you, and I could get on the board and go over a 3-4 defense. But you know what? This third game of the season when people start attacking us a certain way, boy, now all of a sudden I got nothing to fall back on. I don't have experience of making those adjustments or seeing that before. I don't have past references to say, yeah, we did it this way. I'm making adjustments on the move. And it's, that can get you a little bit, guys. I'm just telling you. You just got to be careful.
Dave Wannstedt with Mack and Parkins on The Score. Have any of the moves in the NFL coaching carousel surprised you in particular?
Well, I don't know Matt LaFleur, but that one surprised me. I mean, just because the guy's, never been in that position before. I mean, they are going youth, but, obviously anybody who thinks that Aaron Rodgers is not heavily involved in everything that goes on at Green Bay, I think this clarifies that point. I mean, this is what Aaron Rodgers was most comfortable with, I'm sure, and that's why they went that way. God bless them. Cliff Kingsbury, I know well. He's a good offensive mind, but I remember when he was at Texas Tech, he went down, the athletic director had him, who's good friends with Jimmy Johnson, had him talk to Jimmy Johnson for a while about the importance of special teams and defense, because all he wanted to do was throw the ball. Hopefully he's learned those lessons. We'll find. And Adam Gase, you guys know Adam. I mean, Adam Gase, here's the deal. I was doing some Miami stuff when he got the job there. I supported him all the way. I was a big fan of his. When he got rid of a couple of the problem children, right, that were on the team, I really applauded that. But the players didn't respond to like I wanted them to. For some reason, they were up one week, horrible the next week. Very inconsistent. But, Mike McCarthy, I mean, Mike's probably not a great interview. I don't know, but I know Mike wanted that Jets job. And Adam Gase went in there and, the young guy, that he's smart. He knows what he's doing. He knows the division. So, I mean, you can figure this stuff out. I mean, you put Cliff Kingsbury in there, he's sharp. And then, I did some of his games. I interviewed him when he was at Texas Tech and we were doing the Fox games. I mean, the guy is smooth. He's a great guy. I think he's a super guy. And he is smooth and he can talk. And you put him in there against an old football coach. And I'll tell you what, if you're an owner, these young guys, as I told you, and they're Under Armour warm-ups and their baseball caps, they're getting all the jobs.
Yeah, guys who look good in Under Armour. Dave, I want to comment on two things you've just addressed and see what your response is. One, if I were a fan of the Arizona Cardinals, I would be terrified because Kingsbury has never been an NFL assistant, not for a day. Number two, Adam Gase had better tone down his press conference act in New York or they will eat him up. Tuna got away with it because he won. If Sam Darnold throws three picks on opening day and he pulls that act, picking on reporters, it bugs me that PR offices cannot communicate to the head coach, these idiots you're looking at and answering questions with every week, you get sick of them. They are nothing more than a conduit to your fan base. Treat them as though you are talking to your fans. That's what good PR directors do, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, no. Absolutely. I agree with you on all counts, and we'll see who Cliff Kingsbury hires. I mean, that's going to be critical to him. I mean, there's no question the guy's excellent with quarterbacks. I mean, hey, guys, look at what he did he had a freshman quarterback this year at Texas Tech, and the guy actually broke a few of Patrick Mahomes' records. You know, and he had Mahomes. So the guy can throw the ball now. He's smart, and he can coach quarterbacks. You know, but obviously there's more to it than that. I think, I don't know, unless this thing has really moved another direction. But I'm happy for Vic Fangio. You know, I said that on national TV. That was my wish list for the new year, that I said, hey, a 60-year-old defensive-minded coach. And look at Fangio's resume. I mean, he deserves an opportunity. You know, the resume, where he's been and what he's accomplished. So I'm happy for him. And, you know, the Bears don't need to over. I would just tell, if Nagy called me, I would just say, make sure it's the right guy. Don't do a knee-jerk reaction on this thing. You know, just be sure. And but I would try to get somebody that's going to fit. You know, obviously the foundation that's set there, because you don't want to take a step backwards.
Some people they wanted us to throw more names at you. There's a lot of them that have been former head coaches: Jack Del Rio, Rex Ryan, Chuck Pagano, Greg Williams.
Yeah. You know, Chucky Pagano would be great. I think Chuck would be a good name. You know. Rex, I don't know. I don't know. You know, knowing Matt Nagy's personality, you know, and knowing the city of Chicago, I mean, it's you know, as big a stage as you're going to get. I don't know if those personalities would match. Chuck Pagano would, I think, be a great hire. And he's a 3-4 guy. I think he would be great. I know Chucky. I got Chucky's first job. I was at USC coach, and he was my GA. And Jimmy got the Miami job and said, I want you to come down and run the defense. And I said, okay, I'll come, but I got to bring a guy with me that runs all my tape and gets me set up for my meetings. He says, who's that? I said, a guy, Chucky Pagano. He says, all right, bring him along. So Chucky comes with us to Miami. The rest is history. But he would be great, and not just because I like him, but I think he knows his stuff and he knows his system.
Dave, off the beaten path just for a little bit, Sean Payton, apparently, to motivate the Saints this week, brought in the Lombardi Trophy, a Super Bowl ring, and $225,000 in cash, which is what the player share would be if they went all the way through.
Wow, what'd he do, get in the trunk of Robert Irsay?
Yeah,
or Jimmy Irsay?
Jim Irsay, yeah. As a motivation tactic for his team before the playoffs. What's the biggest motivation tactic like that you've ever done?
Boy, you know what? That's a great idea. I love that. You know, that's a Parcells. Probably, you know what, we had just beaten the Packers, I believe it was, had a big win about the Packers, and we were going to play San Diego out there, road trip, and they were struggling. I believe Ryan Leaf might have been their quarterback, maybe not, and at the Dolphins, and we were 4-0 or 5-0, or I don't know. You know, we were at a good team, and I was scared to death. And so when the players came in on Monday, on every one of their chairs, I had a little mousetrap set sitting right there. And in the locker room, we had a big one hanging up there. And they came in. Obviously, they got a big chuckle out of it, but it got their attention. I think and all week long, that thing hung in the locker room, and they every time they came in, they were thinking trap game, trap, without me saying it. Without the coach saying it, they hear that crap all the time. They say, oh, yeah, okay, trap game, we get it. Well, this just brings it to light a little bit more. I think that was the message with Payton. Stand up there and say, hey, this is what we're playing for. You know, we're playing for a ring. We're playing for this. But you know what? You bring it out there. There's a visual of it. It's real. They can touch it. They can see it. More impact.
Dave, great stuff. Thank you. We'll see you soon.
Talk soon, Dave.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
That's Dave Wonstedt with us on the McNeil and Parkin Show. What a great story, though, by Sean Payton.
Yeah, that is.
$225,000 in cash.
Just a big duffel bag full of cash, huh?
They had armed guards protecting it.
Yeah, and that's a good idea.
Yeah, and they just were like, here, this is what you're playing for.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised you didn't bring in a bowl of Vicodin.
That's what you're playing with.
Yeah. Well, because Sean Payton, you know, I mean, yeah, he had the issue with the pain meds. Hello, yeah. Pot, meat, kettle.
Yeah, exactly. Kindred spirits in that regard.
unlimited in the trainer's room. If you win, look what happened to us a few years ago.
Oh God. I don't know how much you've been following the Kyler Murray story, but I think he has made a fascinating decision. Top 10 pick of the Oakland A's, about $5 million in salary guarantees,
right.
Won the Heisman Trophy, now might be a first-round pick. He's decided to enter the NFL draft. The guy who has the number one pick, Cliff Kingsbury, when he was at Tech, he said of Kyler Murray when Tech was getting ready to play Oklahoma, he's an amazing football player who I would pick with the number one pick in this NFL draft. Would you get beat up and try to be a quarterback at 5'11"? Would you take the guaranteed money in football? How would you handle it? I think it's a fascinating one. And we haven't had a two-sport athlete in a while. Could you even do it with quarterback? There's so much there that this kid is going to be facing going forward.
I heard Jim Rome talking about how the smart move is to play baseball. That's easy for you to say. Just follow your heart.
Yeah.
Whatever you are most compelled to do, what brings you the most joy? If it's money, then play baseball. If money is your ultimate motivation, you want to have generational wealth for your grandkids' grandkids, then you probably should play baseball. If football means the world to you, then you should do that. Jeff Samardzija would have been a late first-round draft pick, early second-round draft pick, and I would have loved to have seen Sammy in a Bears uniform.
Oh, yeah.
He's made more than $100 million in his career, but he would have been a hell of an NFL player. He didn't want to play pro football. He enjoyed his time at Notre Dame, and when the minute he put that gold helmet down for the last time, he said, I'm done. I'm playing baseball.
Jeff Samardzija.
Wow. Deep cut. I also think there's a different element to being a quarterback.
Yes, there is.
Being one of 32, but it's a fascinating situation he finds himself in. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
Talk about, I don't know. I don't sit there and ask him all these questions, and I just know the guy couldn't go today. All right, go ask him. I'm tired of answering this question about this guy. I got it, but you know what? I'm over it. Me and him, we know that he's not right now. Okay? The details of it, we'll keep that to us. You guys don't need to know that.
The charming Adam Gase, head coach of the New York Jets. Yep, you like that act in Miami? More of it coming to the biggest media market in America. Good luck if you want to take that attitude into that town.
And just to be clear of what that was the head coach of an NFL team being asked about the injury to his starting quarterback.
Right.
Not out of line at all.
Yeah.
I'm tired of answering this question about this guy.
Yeah, I had a nice exchange with a texter over this. He says maybe PR has told him and he doesn't give an F what PR thinks. There's a good chance that's true. That would be unfortunate if the PR director, upon noticing that, doesn't take it to the next level above himself and insists that it changes. Because if you're the owner of an NFL team or you're the general manager, you don't want your fan base think head coach is a jagweed, do you? You doesn't have to be the most endearing guy in the world. He doesn't have to be a warm and fuzzy or cut up the room, but be respectful. And I know they get sick of looking at the same silly faces and the same repeated questions or guys taking it off. I know they get tired of it. You got to think every time you're at that lectern, your fans are watching. That's how you need to think of it. And good PR directors inform their head coaches. This is how you should. The Bears have done a very nice job, I have to say, PR-wise over the years, instructing their coaches how to comport themselves. They didn't always stick to it, but there were always conversations when they didn't, and they've done a pretty good job with media training for their players. And good for them for doing that.
It does matter. It is speaking to the fans, and not just because we are in media, but it's a good highlighter of, yeah, you're right. They brought in that guy to that media market, and they don't care if it leads to some extra New York Post headlines. A, the Jets are happy to get him, right? They're the second team in that town behind the Giants. But also, I bet you that was a very simple decision for them. Who among our coaching candidates is the best bet to maximize Sam Darnold? Period. Regardless of age, experience, likability, anything.
Gase comes with a ton of recommendations. There are a lot of people who are regarded as among quarterbacks. Peyton Manning loves him.
Right.
It's hard to argue his football credibility, but the way he comports himself is a holio, and I wouldn't put up with it if I were an NFL executive above him.
And I understand that, but I'm just saying it's illuminating as to what is right now the number one thing in the NFL. People are talking about, oh, it's about copying the Bears or copying the Rams. I guess it's really about the most valuable thing in the sport by far. It's a salary cap sport. Most valuable thing in the sport by far is if you can have a quarterback on a rookie contract who's good, because you can spend money elsewhere and it immediately gives you a window. So if they can hire a coach who makes Sam Darnold good next year,
right,
then they've got 4 years to try to win with him on the cheap. Right? Like, this is year three of the Rams having Goff on the cheap. This was year two of the Bears having Trubisky on the cheap. Look at the teams in the playoffs. Lamar Jackson, rookie deal. Mitch Trubisky, rookie deal. Pat Mahomes, rookie deal. Deshaun Watson, rookie deal. It's a huge competitive advantage.
Right, right.
So I'm not saying you're wrong about it. And my guess is they even agree with you. Like, oh, God, this guy's going to step in it a few times in the New York media, and he's really going to anger some people.
Yeah.
But we got to have Sam Darnold be good.
And I want to make it clear, I couldn't care less about, oh, poor media. You want to condescend to goofs like us? Have at it. We deserve it, most of us. I've been in those rooms. I've asked dumb questions. I've deserved to be condescended to by coaches. That's not who I'm going to bat for. It's a fan base. It's you as a fan are deserving of a more diplomatic, more presidential response, if you will. Maybe that's exaggerating it a little bit. Maybe that's hyperbole. I'm in the hyperbolic chamber one more time,
Love
Danny.
It. Love the hyperbolic
but
chamber.
I just think you got to be sensitive to your fans. If you're going to be dull. Lovey was dull. And Lovey occasionally went jagweed. I'm going to use it a few times since that's the texters are running with it, too.
It's kind of nice. It's new.
Cool, right? Something different?
I explained jagweed, Ed. Don't worry about it.
You know what it means.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't use the second syllable I usually use with jag.
Yeah.
So I'll go with weed.
Sure. That's right. Fine. Mackian. Bottom of the hour on the score, by the way, brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves own their best start since the last championship and boast the most all-stars of any AHL team. For the 25th anniversary, enjoy free parking courtesy of Kia. High-scoring winning hockey and free parking. Chicago Wolves, last team standing. That's the prevailing takeaway from all of this, is that the Broncos don't have a young quarterback. They have no quarterback, so they're cool with hiring Vic Fangio. But if you have a quarterback of value, whether it's Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay or it's Josh Rosen in Arizona, or it's Sam Darnold with the Jets.
Young coach, quarterback, offensive-minded.
Number one thing.
Yep.
Tampa doesn't really have much value assigned to Jameis Winston. Cool going with an
he
older coach.
He won't be their quarterback in 2 years.
Exactly. So, go get an older coach. But if you've got a quarterback of value that you think you can win with, you need the young, progressive, plugged-in, aggressive coach to what's going on in the NFL right now. And it doesn't matter that Cliff Kingsbury has absolutely no NFL experience other than the few years he was a mediocre player. It doesn't matter. They're not valid. Now, it might end up mattering, and in 3 years we might judge it as a mistake if all of these guys get fired, but that won't make them any different than the head coaches that were hired 3 years ago.
You follow anybody who covers the Cardinals on Twitter? I don't. I don't have any media friends in Arizona.
I don't either.
Yeah, I would love to find out what they're saying in Arizona about this. Fan base's reactions to good news, bad news, big news always is interesting to me. I've got to think there are a lot of people saying, what in the F did you guys just do? This guy was a journeyman as an NFL player, didn't last long in the league, and has never coached a down in the NFL at any position. He's never been a quality control guy. He's never held a bag. He's never done any of that stuff. Why are you hiring him to entrust the franchise?
Well, don't you think, though, that most fan bases that have hired a coach right now could poke a hole in it? Like, what fan base right now, has there been a home run hire? We all were like, Matt LaFleur gets to coach Aaron Rodgers?
Matt LaFleur next to Cliff Kingsbury is Vince Lombardi. He's been a coordinator for 1 year. He was Goff's quarterback's coach for 1 year, so he learned at the feet of the brilliant 32-year-old man who's handsome with nice hair gel. He's at least got some NFL background. It's not extensive, but there's some.
I agree with you. He undeniably, he has more experience. Like, it's on his resume. That's tangible. But I guess what I'm saying is John Gruden was a heavyweight hire. Now, I laughed at it. I thought it was ridiculous. But that was a heavyweight, undeniable pedigree, name recognition, season ticket office, has the phone ringing type of hire.
Mm-hmm.
None of those were made this offseason anywhere.
That's true.
Because it's not the thing that matters most right now. It's not about winning a press conference. It's not about name recognition. That they are saying value one, and it's a copycat league, so they're all doing it.
Yeah, and if Sean McVay goes out this weekend and again remains without a playoff win on his resume, people are going to start thinking, maybe we jumped the gun on this 30-something offensive mind, good-looking guy thing.
Maybe.
That's the other universal trait. They're all handsome guys. Every damn one of them. Yeah, Matt LaFleur is a good-looking guy. Cliff Kingsbury is like model good-looking guy.
Sean McVay
is a great-looking man.
Yeah. I will not be one of those to pile on Sean McVay, by the way. 24 regular season wins in 2 years. You're doing a good job.
I know. It's not so much on him. It's that people have followed that model. Like, it's the, you know, just like sheep lining up to be sheared.
No, well, it's a copycat league. Mike McCarthy got one job interview.
Yeah, worked for the Rams. Look how good they're doing. Got to work for us. Let's find a guy who's never been an NFL head coach, but he looks good in Under Armour, and he likes quarterbacks, and he's young. Okay, he'll fix us.
And it worked for the Bears.
It did. It did. He had NFL pedigree, though. NFL experience.
Yeah.
Not extensive, but 9 years of it. 9 or 10. Was he on Andy's staff?
This is 10. This was...
He had 9 years coming in.
Yeah. And part of it was coming from Andy Reid. Like that was part of it too, is that, oh, well, all of these other guys have worked, so why wouldn't this next guy work? There's another layer to young offensive coach gets hired, and it leads to a little bit more complicated and much more serious conversation that we'll get into coming up on The Score. La 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 la
la la.
Neil and Parkins on The Score. 20 years ago today, the first episode of The Sopranos aired. We'll circle back around to that at some point in the 5 o'clock hour. Alan Sepinwall, the terrific television critic, was on, 4 hours ago at this point.
The music today to commemorate the anniversary has been an enjoyable change. Not that Tanny doesn't always pick great tunage, but I have enjoyed the departure from the Daily Fare. The typical fare. Van Morrison, are you kidding me? Tons of Stones today.
Been fantastic.
Pretenders. Yeah, I'm digging it.
3 hours ago, by the way. Terrible at math, but he was on 3 hours ago, Alan.
Three hours ago. We had him on at 150. We have decided that is the money spot for our guests. Star interviews, always at 150.
It's time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. This hour's keyword is victory. Text VICTORY to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is VICTORY to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. You heard this earlier on the station today.
I did, yes. I thought it was a fantastic editorial.
It was from Dale Hansen, TV station in Dallas. He knocks him out of the park. We were talking about hiring practices in the NFL, going young and offensive. Well, that makes all the sense in the world based on where the league is as a trend. But there is an unintended consequence of that, which is right now only 2 of the 32 head coaches in the NFL are black, and 70% of its workforce is African-American. Dale Hansen in Dallas weighed in.
Been a lot of criticism of the Arizona Cardinals hiring Cliff Kingsbury as their new coach. Even my guys Mike and Jonah have been questioning that hire. But Kingsbury fits all the criteria to be a head coach in the NFL. He's an offensive genius, he's young, and he's white. And not necessarily in that order. There have been 6 new coaches hired so far, all white, and 2 coaches of color they are replacing. Steven Wilks, fired in Arizona after just 1 year. Vance Joseph in Denver after just 2. But Cowboys coach Jason Garrett is in his 9th year, apparently because he wins so much. A lot of people don't understand how Kingsbury can have a losing record at Texas Tech, no NFL experience, and get one of the 32 NFL jobs. But getting fired at Tech doesn't eliminate him from moving up, at least it doesn't to me. I've had 11 jobs in my life, been fired from 8 of them, and moved up every time. And I am arrogant enough to tell you, I think Channel 8 was right to give me another chance. But I am the product of white privilege in America, and I've never denied that I wasn't either. If they made a poster, my picture should be on it. Getting fired at one place and getting another chance isn't the problem. But young, talented coaches of color not getting the chance, that's a huge problem. The covert racism of the NFL ownership group was so bad, the NFL had to make a rule so that minority coaches could at least get an interview. Cowboys secondary coach Chris Richard has been interviewed, and there are reports saying he might get the Miami job. After what he's done with this Cowboys defense, how could he not? Unless it is true, what black parents have been telling their children for decades now, you have to be twice as good to go half as far. I dream of the day when those parents are wrong, because now they're not.
That's great stuff.
It's powerful.
Every word of it's true.
Every word of it is true. And there is a Rooney Rule in the NFL that is being abused and mocked right now.
Let me tell you a little bit about what I know about the Rooney Rule. At least, I have heard more than once when an NFL head coaching candidate who was, air quotes, a Rooney Rule candidate was flown to the city to which he was traveling for the interview in coach. Nothing would scream to me more Rooney Rule when I jumped on that plane when I see, okay, you're in 17D. Go ahead, enjoy your middle seat. What? It's sad. And I think Chris Richard, and I'm going to go with Richard because that's what I'm hearing. I heard it as Richard most of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Chris with a K, Richard of the Cowboys. I hope he gets that gig because I agree with what Dale just said. He's earned it. I see how his players respond to him. I've seen feature pieces on him. I've watched the Cowboys play this year. He has a terrific background defensively in Seattle as well under Pete Carroll. He is exceedingly qualified to be the Dolphins head coach. I hope he gets it.
Texter comes in. Ah, here comes the liberal Parkins show. Who gives a beep
about
the
Parkins
color?
Parkins and McNeil on this one.
You were the one who heard it.
I wanted to do it, yes.
Who gives a beep about the color of a coach? The best coaches should get the job. Male, female, black, white.
You're right. That's the question. Are they? That's what people want to know. If this makes you uncomfortable, good. It should make you uncomfortable.
Exactly. The goal is a utopic world where the best get the job. Regardless of age, sex, race, sexual orientation, anything like that. That is not the world in which we live, period. There are implicit biases that exist throughout any sort of institution that exists.
Mm-hmm.
You want a police force to reflect the racial demographics of the counties and areas in which it polices. A school system, you would want it to reflect the racial demographics of the kids at which it teaches. And then in an NFL situation, if 70% of the players are black and only 2 of 32 coaches are black, something's off there. Now, it's absolutely true that that's just a one-year snapshot. Vance Joseph, Steve Wilks, Marvin Lewis were just fired, and you can make an absolutely justifiable case to fire any of them.
You could have made a case for Mike Tomlin should have been in the big pile of former coaches last weekend also.
So this is not about any one year and one data set and
correct.
One coach and
this
one decision.
This is history.
Correct. And so that's where this part, to me, gets even a little bit more interesting. The NFL has a documented history. Football is a documented history of thinking not that long ago that black people were not smart enough to be quarterbacks.
That's correct. In my lifetime. In your lifetime.
Yeah, I remember Donovan McNabb took mm-hmm. crap for him on Monday Night Countdown.
Yeah.
So we're not talking that long ago. So now if the trend is offensive coaches, well, that means quarterback coaches and offensive coordinators. A lot of them have quarterback backgrounds. So if there has not been as long of a history of black quarterbacks, then there is maybe a ceiling that exists for black coaches on the offensive side of the ball to be promoted. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could be an offensive line coach, you could be a running back coach, but you're not going to necessarily be the quarterback
right.
coach or the play caller. And if you look throughout the NFL, look at the number of offensive coordinators, look at the racial breakdown there, overwhelmingly white.
Mm-hmm.
And the league is getting much more diverse with black quarterbacks, obviously, but that is not yet reflected in the coaching ranks. And so the rule exists for a reason, to try to make the coaching workforce reflective of the player workforce. And that's not being discriminatory towards white people. That's what I think some people get. Like, equality doesn't mean I'm taking rights away from you. It means I'm bringing up other people to try to be on the same level as you. People hear white privilege and they freak out.
Right.
It doesn't mean that if you're white, everything was just given to you and it was so easy or anything like that. That's not what it means. It just means anything that you got, you weren't hindered because you were white.
Right. It is easy to interpret it that way.
Of course. Yeah. And I get why people be defensive. Like, oh, come on, I don't have white privilege. My life's hard, or I struggle to pay rent, or whatever the case may be. Cool. It's just not because you're white.
I'm 58 this coming summer, Danny. I've had a lot of jobs, most of them in my adult life in media, most of them in radio. I've worked briefly in newspaper. As a kid, I went to a Lily White High School in Northwest Indiana. The only time in my life I ever have been in a world that was colorblind, it was a very short time. It was the 4 months I played junior college football. That was the only time in my life where the world wasn't black and white. It was we were the Bulldogs.
Yeah,
and I'd like to tell you it was Georgia, but it was a junior college. That's the only time I've ever been in a world, and that's how it is in those locker rooms. That's how players feel. That's how coach, for the most part, not universally, but
yeah, of course,
for the most part, we had one racist on the team. But I was around black guys a lot for the first, and they weren't black guys to me. Sinatra McGee, who also was a fullback, my roommate on the road, we were just teammates. We were roommates. We were black and white, but God, it's the ownership. It's not the players and coaches. It's the owners, the old boys club, that is reluctant to evolve.
Well, and there is something about implicit bias that you don't even necessarily know that you have. And so I'm sure sometimes it is overt and uncomfortable and racist, but it's also hire who you know, hire who you're comfortable with, hire who your friends are. So it doesn't always have a malicious intent in terms of I'm hiring this white guy over this black guy because this guy is black. It doesn't always exist. Sometimes it does, but oftentimes it's probably that you don't even know. You don't even recognize it. It's just, oh, well, this guy is 44 years old and he's a former quarterback and
right.
he just is what it is. And it's the guy that you know. Jerry Jones knew Jason Garrett, to use Dale Hansen's example, because he was a backup quarterback on the Cowboys. But that type of thing exists, and it's an implicit bias, and it's important for all of us to acknowledge it, because it has to strike most people as disproportionate that 2 of 32 head coaches in the NFL are black when 70% of the workforce is black. That has to strike you as disproportionate.
And to take it to a different level of NFL, top of the food chain, my fondness for the guys who blow the whistle. This year, there are 5 new NFL officials, first year, and one of them happens to be black, Sean Smith.
The white hats.
Yeah, the white hats.
Yeah.
He became, are you ready for this? He became the 6th referee, just the 6th referee in NFL history to be of color.
That's crazy. Texter says, curious, what is the ratio of black-white for owners? Am I wrong? Is Shad Khan in Jacksonville the only minority owner in the NFL? And he's not African-American?
I believe so.
And that is a problem that is almost impossible to solve, frankly, because you can't force someone to sell his team.
Mm-hmm.
So that problem is so ingrained institutionally in a privately run and owned business that we don't have nearly enough time and all that. But that's part of what we're talking about. That implicit bias that exists that makes it harder for these numbers to change.
I have a friend who's a minority who is a head coach of an NFL team. I thought about calling Ron Rivera of the Panthers today to talk about this subject. It's very layered and it's very heavy, and it's not typically the thing we get into, but it's in the news. And those of you who have texted saying, who you crap, and you said no politics, this is not political. This is we're talking about head coaches in the National Football League and why there is such disparity. It has nothing to do with politics.
Yeah. And by the way, racial equality should not be a politically divisive issue. And if it is, I think you might want to ask yourself why you think it is. It's McNeil and Parkins on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.